Today is Thursday, September 29th, 2022. This is part 4 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Bonnie McAllister. Bonnie spells her last name M-C-A-L-I-S-T-E-R. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Bonnie. How are you today?
I am doing good today.
Good. Glad to hear it. May we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
You have my permission.
Thank you. Gosh, we've talked about a lot of your growing up and cattle drives and horse riding and all kinds of things. Your dad got connected to the Colorado River. And I'm curious to know, I mean, he got connected to the river, I think, for watering sheep and cattle. Is that right?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. He may have, but I do not remember that at all.
Okay. Yeah, it would have been maybe even before you were born.
Yes.
And there was no way to get down to the river down Mule Canyon. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. So to get to the river, he would have had to go into someone else's grazing allotment?
Yes. And I'm trying to think of the name, and I don't remember the name, but we had to go down through where the spring was that came from up on the mountain over a bunch of lava rocks and down that direction.
Is that down toward Whitmore Wash?
That's down towards Whitmore Wash, yes.
Okay. Yeah. What do you remember about that spring that was there? Was it big or was it small?
No, it was very small.
Okay.
There was a trough made out of cement there, as I remember, and then the overflow from that trough would run into a little pond that was just right there next to it.
Okay.
And it came from Nixon Spring, from what I understand. It was like the water from Nixon that seeped down. I'm not positive about think that that was, that's how I understood it as a child anyway.
Okay.
And they were the same spring, except they had someone, a Mr. White, or someone had, I don't know if he'd taken a pipe or what he'd done to get that water down towards Whitmore.
Okay, yeah, I was wondering if it was piped from the concrete tank you saw.
Yeah, I think it was, but I don't know that for sure.
Up the kind of the Whitmore Canyon or
that's uh-huh.
Up toward the springs up there, up Nixon Spring and up that way.
Right.
Okay. And then, yeah, lots of lava rocks, bumpy.
Oh, yes.
And then there was a stock trail from the end of the road. There was a lion shack out there, wasn't there? A couple lion shacks.
I don't remember those.
They may have come in later.
Yeah, because they, after I left and went to St. George to school, they built up that that ranch right there by that spring a lot.
Okay.
And they would keep people there overnight before, you know, after they took them out of the river.
Oh, yes. This is much later. Right.
Much later. Right. Right.
But your point is well taken that your dad's grazing allotment did not include access to the Colorado River.
Right.
But he was very conversant with that area.
Yes.
Did he and his brothers, would they head out there and just pal around and just check out the country?
I think so.
Okay. That would make sense that they had done that when they were kids or younger. Before, you know, you raise a family and you got to run the cattle and, you know, whatever else you're doing out there.
Right. He was like 16 or 17 years old when his mom and dad went out there and they settled that area and started the homestead.
Okay. Yeah, so certainly in his late teens, he could have explored that country just to check it out.
Oh, yeah.
That would make sense. Okay. So what do you recall about your first journey to the Colorado River down that bumpy basalt road?
I just remember that it took a long time to make that trip and that it was a bumpy, rough road. I don't remember a lot when I was real young. My first recollection was going with Mom and Dad when I was 8 years old down to take supplies to Georgie White. And I was not going on that trip. Mom and Dad were going with her. And I think that was one of their first trips from Whitmore down to Lake Mead.
Okay.
And when we got down to the river, because we'd always have to go a day ahead of time in order to get all the supplies into the river.
Okay.
Waiting for Georgie when she got there. Because one thing Dad did never wanted to be late for anything.
Okay.
He was always very prompt. So I remember the that we stayed there, and I was laying on my sleeping bag or bedroll, whatever it was, a blanket on the ground, and looking up at the sky and seeing a star. And I said, I wish I may, I wish I might. Something about star I see tonight, and then you could make a wish. Now, I don't know where I heard that from, if it was from school or some book. I don't know. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the first star you saw, you could make. And so I wished that I could go with Mom and Dad on the river.
Oh, wow.
But I never told anybody. Never told anybody that I had. And I was my older sister, Nina V, and her, I think it was maybe her husband, or maybe it was just her boyfriend then, that they was serious, whatever it was. Two of them were going down, and they were supposed to bring the truck back. We never had to worry about getting the horses back home. Because when you would turn a horse loose, gosh, he would make a beeline for home. Faster than we could in the truck.
Wow.
Yes, they most always would beat us home. So anyway, we got down to the river. And Mom and Dad were getting ready to leave, and I don't know how it happened exactly, but Georgie said something to my dad about, oh, because I was the youngest person to have ever gone down the Colorado River in a boat. And so Dad said, well, yeah, as long as we're going along, so, you know, things should be fine. But I could never ride. I always had to ride on the big boat.
Hey, Bonnie, the phone is cutting in and out here.
So the big boats had more people. And
hey, Bonnie, Bonnie? Bonnie, can you hear me?
Would often tip over when it would go.
Hey, Bonnie, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
We're cutting.
Can you not hear me?
We're cutting in and out somehow.
Oh, okay. Let me see positions and see if that will help. Although this is where the spot I sat in the other day when I talked to you.
Okay.
I'll move and see if this works better.
Okay, and then.
Is this any better?
Yes, and then please go back. You made a wish to go on the river with your mom and dad, and Nynaeve, your older sister, and her husband, there was a truck, and the horses would go back to the house. Then what happened at the river? Georgie was talking to your dad, and what happened then?
And somehow the conversation came up. He asked my dad if I would like to go along. And so he came to me, and, oh, I was so excited.
Oh.
My wish had come true.
Cool.
And, yeah, and so, okay, you know. Well, I hadn't gone prepared to go. I just had the clothes that I had on my back. That was all I had. And it was like a five-day trip.
Okay.
More walks down to Lake Mead. But anyway, I had a swimming suit and the clothes that I had on, and that was all I had.
Nice.
I remember when we got to Lake Mead, to Boulder City, why Georgie's husband took me to a clothing store and bought me a whole new outfit, new clothes.
Oh, my. Was that Whitey?
That was Whitey.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And that was exciting, because
wow.
I'd never, you know, gone to the store and bought new clothes before.
Nice.
So it was just a very, very adventurous trip. And I remember getting on the boat and Dad saying to me, now, no matter what happens, these are the ropes that you hold on to, because there were ropes that tied the boats together.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you don't, even if a big wave comes over the top of you, you still just hang on, because the boat will come out the other side and you'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember, sure enough, a big wave came up over me and I thought maybe I might drown there, but it soon passed. I was all wet when I came out on the other side, but I was still hanging on.
Okay.
Yep.
Wonderful.
So,
did you know how to swim at the time?
Yes. Yes, I knew how to swim. But, you know, Dad had always told us, you know, it doesn't matter how good of a swimmer you are, when you're in those rapids, you can't swim out of them.
Mm-hmm.
You have no control.
Right.
You know, the current is just going to take you.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew enough when we would swim in the river right there at Whitmore that we could not cross the river because it was too swift.
Right.
And we had heard his many stories of riding logs down the river and thinking that he was going to drown a couple of times.
Did you have life jacket on that trip? This is 1954.
And, of course, my mom was right there next to me. But we were all, you know, everybody had to hold themselves on.
Right.
So, anyway, that was my first experience with Golden River.
Okay.
I do remember, you know, because Georgie always cooked for the whole group. And she would take all these cans of food, you know, beans, and she'd make this delicious chili with, you know, all kinds of different beans and stuff in it, and it was really good.
Uh-huh.
For breakfast, we had cold cereal and canned fruit, and that was my first introduction 22 mandarin oranges.
Oh, wow.
In a can. And I loved those. So did everybody else. So I would have to get up early when it was breakfast time and go down and watch Georgie cook. And then I could go over and get, fish out this can of oranges.
Hmm.
And we'd have oranges and cereal, cold cereal for breakfast. But that was just the best. And I still love them today.
Nice.
Just open up a can and relive all that.
Oh, fun. Very fun. Campfires, cooking right there on the beach?
Yes, cooked right on the beach.
Okay.
She did some campfires. I don't remember. She had stoves, Coleman stoves.
Okay.
That she cooked a lot in. Yeah. I don't remember too many campfires, but there must have been. And then they got to the point that you couldn't, leave your ashes there and all kinds of stuff.
Right, that would come later.
Yeah, that came later.
Yeah. But so by 1954, your dad had been providing food and gasoline for river trips for 5 or 6 years.
Right.
I think the first time he did that would have been in 49 with the Hudson Marston River trip in that boat called the Esmeralda 2. And he also resupplied Norm Neville's that year a few weeks later. And then the next year in 50, he would have resupplied Marston again and Frank Wright and Jim Rigg and then went on from there. When did it come to you as a girl that your dad was starting to take stuff to river runners?
I think we had gone a lot of the time with him down there.
Okay.
But like I say, my first real vivid memory was when I was 8 years old.
Okay. When you actually got on a boat and went downstream. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right. But many times we would have to go along because we would ride the horses to the river.
Oh.
So that they could pack the groceries in. And, you had to have someone to do that. So before I was 8, I was doing that. But I don't recall how old I was or when I first started or when I first went.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit to make sure I understand this. So you guys had a truck. Do you remember what kind of truck you had?
First of all, it was kind of like a stake bed truck.
Okay.
Where the sides would come off.
Yep.
But then later on, he just had a pickup truck.
Okay.
That we would, but there was no room to haul the horses down there.
Right.
In the truck with all the supplies that he had to take and all the gasoline.
Got it. Okay. So he would load up the truck with supplies and drive down there on that bumpy road.
Right.
And who else would you ride with to get the horses down there?
My siblings.
Okay.
My siblings would go, and we would ride the horses down. And we'd leave early in the morning, and we wouldn't get there until evening time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were riding all day.
All day.
To get to the top of the trail.
Right. Right. And we could stop at the spring and water the horses.
Okay.
And get a drink of water for ourselves.
Okay.
And sometimes, I think we usually have lunch, but I don't remember that. I know that a lot of times we went without a lunch.
Okay.
And when Dad came, if he happened to pass us on the way and get there before we did, you know, he would have a lunch for us and give us a lunch. And why we did not take any water with us, I do not know. But we would ride these horses. I guess he thought we wouldn't get thirsty, or maybe he figured if we did, the next time we'd take water, but we never did.
Huh.
We never took water. The only water we had was when we got to that spring. And then, you know, we considered that about halfway.
Yeah, okay.
And I remember getting down to the top of Whitmore Wash one time, and I was so thirsty. And Dad always had water in the truck with him, and so I started drinking that water. And the next thing I knew, I was throwing it up.
Oh.
Because it was hot. The weather was hot, and I was drinking this water, and I just drank too much. And, you know, when you're dehydrated like that, you can't drink a whole lot of water. You have to take it a little bit at a time.
Would he have set out some water for the horses, too?
He must have, but I don't remember that. I don't remember him watering the horses once we got there. We usually always took a load took the pack animals down to the river when we got there.
Okay, so after that long day's ride, you would actually then go down the trail to the river.
Right.
Okay.
And then the horses could get a drink of river water.
Yes. Got it.
Yeah. And then when we came back out, the horses, sometimes we were able to ride the horse back out, sometimes not.
Mm-hmm.
We had to walk to the top. But someone would always have to stay at the top and catch the horses as they came out of that trail. Because if you weren't there to grab them, to catch them, they would take off for home.
Oh, my. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't ever remember that happening, them leaving, but we knew that that's what would happen, and we would be stuck there without horses.
Right.
And we'd have to strap those bags onto our back and carry them in. Dad would do that quite often anyway. After he got the horses packed up, there would be one or two extra bags that he couldn't get on.
Okay.
So he would just put it on his back like a backpack and carry that along with leading the horse down.
My, okay. Did you lead a horse down, or would you? Yeah, because the horses would be all packed up with food and fuel and things.
Right. When we first started, we had 5-gallon can with gasoline.
Okay.
And if Dad would take a hammer and hammer those lids on so they were really tight.
Oh, wow.
Because a couple of times he didn't get the lids on real tight, and with that gasoline jostling around on the back of a horse,
oh, no.
It would spill out and it would go through the pack saddle onto the horse.
Yep.
And burn the horse's skin.
Yeah.
And they got to where, when they saw those cans coming, oh my goodness, somebody had to hold the horse down in order to get those cans into the bag.
My.
Because they were so heavy. As I remember, I think we only put 2 cans in each of the pack bags. We called them Alfogues. And I don't know if that was the brand name of them.
Sorry, what did you call them?
We called them Alfogues.
How do you spell that?
The pack, I don't know. A-L-F as in Frank, O-G.
Okay.
And I don't know where that came from or if that was the brand that we bought. I have no idea.
Okay.
I haven't thought about that in a long time, but I know that we could put at least two cans on each side.
Oh, wow.
Of the pack. So we would have 20 gallons that he could pack.
That's 160 pounds. Well, I guess a rider would weigh 160 pounds, so that would make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And it may have been more. We may have put four cans, but I don't think so.
Mm.
I don't remember. That was Dad's job.
Mm-hmm.
I just know that a lot of times we had to hide the cans from the horses because they would jerk and take off running, and somebody always had to hold the bridle and hold them down while you put these on, because once you got those cans in the bags, it was really hard to lift them up and put them over the horns on the pack saddle.
Mm.
And so,
they'd be super heavy.
Yeah, they were heavy. And so quite often we'd just lift them one at a time and put them in those bags. The bags were already on the horses.
Mm.
Have to, you know, put them down, wiggle them down in.
Right. And
so that was an experience in itself.
I bet.
And it was so nice when we finally got the pipeline and you didn't have to pack the gasoline on those horses anymore.
Yeah.
But we did that for years and years. That's how we packed gasoline in.
At least, well, maybe 10 years, starting from 49 with the first gas supply down there to 59, which I think is when the tubing went in. That's a lot of years of taking a lot of gas to a lot of river trips.
Yes. And that was every summer.
Okay.
Every summer. And, you know, Georgie would make several trips.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many trips she would make in a summer down the river.
Several, but yeah.
Not counting what Marston did.
Right. And Georgie would typically have one motor on her big boat.
Right.
And then the thrill craft, for starters, the three little boats tied together, they didn't have a motor, did they?
No, they didn't.
Right. So Marston would show up, gosh, in 1951, he had five motor boats. And three of them were inboard V8 or flathead 6 things. They drank a lot of gas.
Yeah, I think that's when Dad decided we had to do something different.
Okay.
Along about that time.
Hmm. So that was your first river trip, would have been in 1954, going from Whitmore down to Lake Mead, and that's fun that Whitey took you out to get some clothes in the big city. Wow.
Yes.
What else do you remember about that river trip?
I remember when we got to Lake Mead, then we could jump into the river because it wasn't, you know, there was no current there.
Mm-hmm.
There was no big current. And when we got there, we could jump off the boat into the river and swim around.
Nice.
And that was a lot of fun. And cool off.
Oh, it would be clear. The water in the reservoir would be clear.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And in 54, I don't think Georgie had started to paint her boats silver back in 54. They would have been black rubber.
They were. And so hot, you couldn't stand on them with your bare feet.
Oh, my.
you had to have some kind of tennis shoes or something on.
Okay.
Because they were way too hot. When she started painting them, that was much better.
Hmm, okay. Do you remember the names that Georgie would use for her boats?
I do not.
Okay.
Don't remember that
and
at all.
Do you remember any of the passengers that you boated with?
No. Other than that they were all, it seemed like they were always older. You know, there was nobody really my age. Well, there was one time I went down that there were a couple of boys that were somewhere close to my age.
Okay.
But yeah, I Belknap rings a bell with me as far as some of the names or names of people. But
yes.
I can't tell you anything other than that.
So Bill Belknap and his wife Fran lived in Boulder City, and they ran a camera store where you could get film and cameras and things.
Uh-huh.
They had two children, Buzzy, who was another Bill Belknap. He was called nicknamed Buzzy, and Buzzy had a sister named Loie.
Okay.
And they got on the river. Certainly, Buzzy did. Because his dad was boating with Marston. And Buzzy got in at Whitmore on his first trip down. So I'm just trying to, you know, piece that together.
Yeah.
And then
I don't remember that at all.
What do you remember of Georgie?
I remember that she was just really a tough lady.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, she could do, and I heard Dad comment several times about how tough she was. She could do a man's work, and she could lift things and maneuver things like, you know, he'd never seen any other woman do before.
Mm-hmm.
But she was also, you know, very kind, very generous, a fun person to be around.
Nice.
You enjoyed talking to her. I don't remember any specific conversations. I just know I remember, you know, liking to sit and listen to her talk about the river or rapids on the river or people, you know, that had got slipped off a boat and they had to catch them down the river a ways and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And some of her boats at times when they went over rapids or hit rock would tear a hole in the boat. And so they'd have to pull over and repair the boat.
Okay.
Had stuff to repair them with.
Glue and patch material?
Right. I don't know when my dad started being an oarsman for her.
Mm-hmm.
But he would row one of the little boats. Well, it would have each of the three boats were tied together, and there were two oarsmen, one on each side.
Right.
And my oldest brother, Lamar, I think went with Dad the first time he was an oarsman, and so was Lamar. The two of them were on the same boat and worked together.
Okay.
But I can't tell you when that was. And I may have been on that trip, but I was never allowed to go in the little boat.
Oh.
Because they slipped. I always had to ride the big boat. And it wasn't until one of my last trips going down the river that I think I was allowed to ride in the little boat, and that was probably from Whitmore on.
Okay.
Because the rapids were not as big and bad,
right,
below Whitmore as they were up the river.
Well, there were still some sporty ones down there. 205 comes to mind.
Yeah.
That could surprise you. Okay. There's a name called the Thrill Craft. Does that ring a bell?
That does not.
Okay. No. And this is what other people were calling Georgie's boats. And so it might not have been on her trips that they were using those terms.
Uh-huh.
And the Queen Mary was her big boat, also called the Elephant Rig.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
Okay, very good. Just checking in on that.
Mm-hmm.
So your first trip downriver was in 54. When did you run again?
I don't know exactly. It may have been the next summer.
Okay.
Because it seemed like there for a while I was allowed to go, you know, at some point every summer. Whether it was from Lee Ferry to Whitmore or from Whitmore on down, I think I did the Whitmore trip probably at least 5 times from Whitmore down to Lake Mead.
Okay.
And others I did. And they were with Mom and Dad again. We hiked into Lee's Ferry from the north rim.
Okay, so hang on a second.
Okay.
Now, Lee's Ferry is up by Marble Canyon Lodge. And if you hiked in from the North Rim Lodge, that would be maybe a 14-mile walk down to Bright Angel Creek.
Yes.
And down to Phantom Ranch.
Yes.
Okay. And maybe you actually started a river trip at Lee's Ferry and went to Phantom Ranch one time. I'm just throwing it out there because I don't...
Yes, we did.
Okay. So...
We may have done Lee's Ferry a couple of times.
Okay. And that's where you start. Georgie would put the boats together. She'd have to tie them all together, blow them all up,
right,
and then load them all up. And that was starting at Lee's Ferry.
Right.
Okay. What do you remember about those trips?
I just remember one of those trips, the hike in, like I say, from the North Rim down to the river, and being there waiting, watching for the boats to come, because quite often she would unload passengers and take on new passengers there.
Okay. Yes, that's right.
And I remember walking down. We left late one afternoon, and I think someone dropped us off there. I don't remember. One of my siblings, probably. Mm-hmm. And we hiked partway down the trail and then slept on the trail and then got up early the next morning and walked into Phantom Ranch.
Okay.
And caught the boat. We did that one time. Then a couple other times we went to Lee's Ferry and started. Most of the time when we started way up like that, well, Dad would go with her all the way through the canyon when he became an oarsman. And then it became the responsibility of the rest of us to get the supplies down to the river.
I was going to ask you about that because as Georgie starts using the Bundy family as boatmen, she's taking away her people that supply food and gas for her.
Right, right. And sometimes we would take the supplies in and hide them in the bushes.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. So that the supplies were already there when she got there.
Got it.
You know, when they became boatmen. A lot of times, my older sister, Nina B, and her husband would take the supplies down for Dad. You know, they knew the routine.
Okay.
And they would take on that responsibility when he became a boatman.
And that's tough because, you know, if you weren't there, your dad's not there. It's like, okay, well, who's going to drive the truck? Who's going to get the horses down there?
Right.
And then who's going to load everything up?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I had younger siblings, and they all had their turn.
Okay.
When I talked to my younger sister just yesterday, she said, oh, yeah. She says, we all went. When it was time to go to the river, we all went to the river.
Nice.
And I go, oh, I don't remember everybody going. I remember going a lot of times by my, you know, just me and Dad.
Uh-huh.
She said, oh, no, we were there. She said that she was there, and I didn't remember this part. She said, we were there when he put the pipeline down.
Okay.
And I said, oh, you remember that? And she said, oh, yeah, I remember that.
You know, yeah, I'll look on my side, too, to see about what year that was. I know I've got it when the year that Chet went out and got all that plastic pipe.
Uh-huh.
Was that, was the whole exchange bringing in the gasoline and the food, was that lucrative for Chet? Was he buying low and selling high, as they say?
As I remember, he got like $300 for a trip, taking the supplies into the river. And, you know, back then, that was quite a bit of money.
It was, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And if he did that for multiple trips,
right,
then it starts adding up.
She would make, yeah. She would make, I think, a lot of times, 3, 5, 6 trips.
Mm-hmm. It slowly started increasing. That's right.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, so yeah, it was good money.
Okay.
I never remember him complaining about, well, this is a lot of work for what little money we got.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did see some receipts go by and you know, prices of fuel and whatnot, but I never, you know, sat down to try to see what other,
right,
you know, comparative costs and that stuff. So.
Right. She purchased all the food that was put into these waterproof rubber bags.
Yep.
She would pack all that. He didn't have to do anything but pick those up in St. George.
Oh, okay.
And out there. Yeah, he didn't have to pack those at all. She had them already packed, and they were according to meal, and she had them labeled on the outside of the bag as to which day and which meal it was, breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Yeah. So it was very well organized.
Excellent. So when Georgie was going to Lee's Ferry, she would come around. She's coming out from California.
Right.
So then she would drive around the St. George side, drop off her food. That makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that way your dad could get the fuel he needed.
Right.
Did he end up with a kind of a big tank on the back of the truck?
It was 55 gallon drums.
Okay, lots of
the back of the truck.
Okay.
Yeah, and I remember times when we would have, you know, 4 or 5 of those barrels in the back of the truck full of fuel.
Oh, so he did have some 55 gallon cans?
They were 55 gallon drums.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Okay. That makes sense. And then, because you can transfer the fuel from there to the 5-gallon cans.
Right.
And also into the plastic.
Right, and then he had 55-gallon drums down at the river also.
Oh, okay.
So we would take the cans with the fuel down into the river and then put that into the 55-gallon drum in order so that we wouldn't have all these 5-gallon cans of gasoline, you know, sitting around.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, it's hot down there in the summer.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, you'd go into the river and get your clothes all wet and everything all wet so that you could be cool when you were walking out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And before you got halfway up the trail, you'd be dried off.
It'd be all evaporated away. Temperature'd be climbing again. Oh, my.
Yeah.
Would you wet the horses down, too, before they started heading out?
No, usually we would wet them down when we got there and unloaded them.
Okay.
And took the packs off.
Mm-hmm.
Then we would take them down close to the river and pour water on their backs.
Okay, but they like that.
You know, let them cool off. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And did you ever tease your dad, or did anybody tease him about having a gas station down there at the river?
Not that I remember. No, everybody was just amazed at how, you know, they had the supplies that they needed and, you know, all of the gasoline that they needed. And, you know, it was just always right there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, he did it to order. We never left any gasoline down there.
Right.
Unless there was another boat coming in a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Know, after Georgie left or before she got there, that's the only time, you know, you would have any excess gasoline. But I think they pretty much came, you know, they were either a week or two apart or a day apart when he was doing both, you know, supplying gasoline, and well, to the motorboat, he didn't supply much food. I think it was always just gasoline for the motorboat. Georgie was the only one that would resupply her food that I remember.
Okay, no worries. I know that Marston did as well. He would have some people coming and going typically at Whitmore, and also some food coming in there. And he'd send a letter to your dad with a list of things to get.
Uh-huh.
And so that was a little different what Georgie was doing, because then your dad would go into St. George and get all that stuff.
Right.
And then
I do remember him carrying eggs in one time.
Yep.
Couldn't put the eggs on the horse.
Okay.
And so he had to carry the eggs. Yeah, it wasn't a lot of other stuff that he had to carry.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, one time we were taking supplies in and we had this black horse that I was telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a kind of a wild thing. And he would get spooked at any little thing. If a rabbit jumped out behind a bush, he would jump.
Okay.
And we needed another horse to carry supplies, and so Dad said, well, we're going to saddle him up and take supplies in, and we're going down the trail, and I'm leading him, and he decides that he doesn't want to have this pack on anymore. So he begins to buck on the trail.
Ooh.
And the pack hits a rock that's sticking out into the trail a little ways.
Right.
You could get around it easily as long as you were careful, but he decided that's the spot he was going to decide to unload the pack. And the pack hit the rock, and it knocked the horse off the trail.
Okay.
And that is very steep.
Yep.
And he rolled down the side of the trail ways, and then was stuck because a rock had landed on his leg.
Oh, no.
And he couldn't get up. So he kept trying and trying to get up, bashing his head against another rock that he was on top of, because all that's along there is rock. And he ended up putting his eye out.
Oh, my.
Anyway, I had to stay there with him and hold him until Dad could, I don't know, come from the top or come from the bottom. I don't remember. But we did a lot of yelling then, and because it kind of echoed in the canyon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you knew that there was a problem. And so Dad came, and he took the pack off the horse and was able to get him up, back up on the trail.
Wow.
But it was really a scary experience.
I bet.
Because you didn't, you know, you always had to lead them to keep them going. And I was leading him, and I didn't know if he was going to run over the top of me or what he was going to do.
Right.
And when he fell, anyway, after that, he was blind in one eye, and so we ended up having to get rid of him.
Okay.
Sold him to the glue factory, I think. I don't remember. But that was the end of him. That was the only really bad experience.
Okay.
That I remember.
That was the only horse to go off?
Yeah. That was the only one I remember.
Okay.
And because I was responsible. You know, I was there with him. I was the one leading him.
Hmm. Yeah.
It was not a fun experience, and I didn't know what to do, or I was too young, I think. And the thought of going down and taking the rock off from his leg so he could get up was just not. He could just stay there as far as I was concerned.
Yeah. And imagine the rocks were hot, so the horse was uncomfortable down there on those black rocks. Yeah, it sounds like a mess all the way around. Wow. Thank heavens that only happened once.
Yes, and he wasn't packing gasoline that time.
Oh, that's fortunate.
He just had the food bag.
Okay.
And so, anyway, I think a few cans got dented, but that was about it. You know, Georgie didn't lose any food at all.
Good. I was going to ask you, did you ever meet Otis Marston at that time?
I did. Uh-huh.
What do you remember about that?
I just remember that he was an old man.
Mm-hmm.
And that, why was he, you know, playing on boats on the river?
Uh-huh.
He was too old to be doing that, I thought.
Okay.
But I guess I also thought he knew what he was doing. So, and all those people, Georgie included, their skin was just as brown, you know, from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
We had sunscreen then, but not the kind of sunscreen that we have now. And they were just, you know, wrinkled and like lizards.
Yes.
The skin was. Uh-huh.
Did you ever meet Doc Marston's daughters? Does that ring a bell?
Mm-hmm. Not that I remember. Uh-uh.
Okay.
No.
All right. And I think Doc actually took your dad for a couple of boat rides, or maybe it was Arwen, or both of them.
Yes, could have been. Uh-huh. Yeah, I never went on those boats.
Okay. And he had hard hull aluminum Smith crafts with one or two motors on the back for most of his runs in the 1950s. It would have been, you know, no rubber pontoon thing. It would have been
right.
Very different.
Right. I just remember Dad saying that the guy was crazy because those boats could tip over very easily.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he just didn't think it was all that safe.
Okay. That's funny. Because Doc thought Georgie's boats were very unsafe. Everybody was looking over everybody's shoulder saying, well, that's really unsafe. And well, that's what they were saying about you, too.
Yeah, right.
Huh. Okay. That's fun. What else do you remember about that?
I remember just the fun times we had playing in the water at the river.
Hmm.
My siblings and I hiking up the river a ways. And, you know, we never rode any logs down the river like my dad did, but, you know, we'd just play in the rock where the water was running. And it was just a fun time.
Fun.
Oh, yes. Alan just reminded me. He said, did you ever dynamite any fish down there?
Aha. Uh-huh. The DuPont spinner. Tell me all about it.
I just remember one time Dad took some dynamite and threw it out into the river. It blew up, and then we had all these fish floating around. And I don't know how we got them. I don't know if we waited for them to get into an eddy so that they came closer to the shore and we could get them out.
Okay.
I don't remember. I don't remember eating them down there, but we must have.
Okay.
I don't remember taking them home either. And we only did that once or twice, maybe.
Okay.
I think it was too hot to build a fire to cook the fish.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a winter sport.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And then, let's see, so you were trying to work out, were you 11, you said, when you went to St. George to go to school?
Yes.
But then you'd had your summers off.
Right. So when I would go home during the summers, that's when I would help Dad.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense.
Yes. Because that was a summer thing. That was not a winter thing. It was a summer thing.
Okay. And so do you remember the jet boat uprun that Doc did, 1960?
Yes. Was he doing some film then?
The film was the year before, was the Disney, the Disney filming. That was 59.
Okay, that's the one I remember the most, and that's because he had a chair mounted on this boat.
Right.
And it was a part of that film that they were making.
Okay. Yes, the Ten Who Dared. They had a replica of the PAL boat, and they had a chair on top of it.
Uh-huh.
Tied on there.
Yes, and I thought that was the craziest thing ever. Who would want to sit in a chair up there?
Did you climb in there and check it out?
Oh, no. I don't remember ever going on any of his boats.
Okay. there were, oh gosh, how many, three, four, five, six, six or seven boats on that trip. That would have been a lot of...
They each had a name.
Yeah, they each had names, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Don't remember the names, but...
Okay. And then for the jet trip, they would have picked up some fuel on the way down and then back on the way up.
Right. He was trying to run Lava Falls, is that correct?
Well, yeah, Lava Falls was something that they had to deal with. Anybody who wanted to uprun.
Right.
And Doc wasn't the only one doing the uprun in 1960. Bill Cooper was out there. There were some other people doing that. And
okay.
I don't know if they needed fuel or not, how they were handling that from your dad.
Yeah, I don't know either. I just know that he had to supply fuel for some of those trips where they were trying to run up the river.
Right. And at
and
one,
I don't know they ever made it over Lava Falls, did they?
Well, they did. But Georgie never acknowledged it.
Oh.
So if you were running with Georgie, they didn't make it.
Okay. All right.
And I don't know if your dad ever mentioned this. The jet boat trip in 1960 had a false start in April. And Doc's wife, Marston's wife, had to get word to your dad. Your dad was going to supply a bunch of fuel there at Whitmore. And then Doc was down with the boats below the Navajo Bridge. They had put a hole in one and they were going to call the trip off. And she got in touch with your dad and canceled that order of fuel until later in the summer.
Oh,
and
okay.
It was an impressive order of fuel. It was a lot of gallons of gas. Did he ever talk about that?
Not. I do kind of remember that. And I think we were probably joyful because we didn't have to go take that gasoline down there.
Mm.
But I mean, as kids, we were joyful.
Right.
But I don't remember, yeah. If he talked about it, it was just that it had been canceled and we weren't doing it.
Okay.
And that was the extent of it.
Okay. And then what do you remember about getting gasoline into that pipe that your dad eventually ran from the end of the Whitmore Road down, hundreds and hundreds of feet down to the river below, I want to say 1,000 feet. Did you ever help get gasoline into that pipe, or were you ever on receiving end of that pipe? How'd that work?
Both. I was both on receiving, and I was also on getting it started down the pipe. Receiving was the best part because all you had to do was walk down, take the hose, and put it into the barrel that we had stored, down there.
Okay.
Get in the bushes, and all you had to do was just put the hose into the barrel. But then you had to stand and watch when the barrel was full so that you could put it into the other barrel and not waste any. And that was the easy part. And we always hoped you got that part, but
well, hang on, Bonnie. When you say easy, I'm like, well, wait a minute. There's gasoline coming out of this black plastic pipe at a high rate of speed, and you're going to run that from one barrel to another. I'm thinking in that 1 or 2 seconds it takes you to make that transition. The gasoline's going everywhere.
You do spill a little, but not much.
Okay.
You have the other barrel. you have the barrel, other barrel right next to it.
Yep.
And you're watching it, and as soon as it gets to the top, you know, you just quick.
Yep.
Transfer it over to the other one.
Okay.
The hard part was being at the top and getting the gasoline started down that pipe.
Why?
Because we didn't have a pump. I don't know why we didn't have a pump, but
okay,
we didn't. You had to siphon it.
Oh.
The gasoline out of the barrel and stick it in the end of the hose.
Got it.
And I don't know if you've ever had gasoline in your mouth.
Not a lot of fun.
But it's not fun. No, your mouth burns forever.
Mm.
And so you got really good at knowing just how much to suck on that hose to get the gasoline to run. Because if you didn't suck quite hard enough, it didn't start siphoning.
Right.
But if you suck too hard, you would get that gasoline in your mouth before you even knew it.
Not fun.
And not fun. And you got pretty good at doing that. You had to, you know, had to practice quite a bit with water. But I got to where I could suck that, knew just how much to suck on that hose to get the gasoline running. And the way we would, the signal would, we would yell. I would be at the top, and I would wait for Dad to yell that he was ready when for the gasoline to be started. And so then I would yell when I was starting the gasoline. And he knew how long it would take for gasoline to get started at the top of the hill until it reached the bottom. I don't remember how long that was, how many seconds or how many minutes. I have no clue what that was.
Hmm.
I don't remember.
I would think it would take, yeah, maybe a minute or so. That's a, if it's 1,000 feet of plastic pipe and it's not being, it's not under a lot of, it's not being forced into the pipe at the top. It's under suction. It's under, you know, a siphon.
Right.
But at the bottom, it would come out with a bang, I bet.
Yes.
Did you all ever run that hose directly into 5-gallon cans?
Occasionally, but not, well, yeah, not in the, if we didn't have room in the 55-gallon drums that we had there, then
mm-hmm.
we would run it into cans. But I don't remember doing that very often. Usually we would siphon it from the 55-gallon drums down there into a 5-gallon can.
Which makes sense, which makes a lot more sense.
To,
yeah.
Yeah. We carried down to the water's edge where the boat was.
Yeah. Someone mentioned they had been on the receiving end of that operation and that the gasoline would come out with such a force it would dent the bottom of the can.
Oh.
But, you know.
I don't remember it being that kind of force.
These are oral histories we're doing.
Yeah.
So everything's like with a little grain of salt there. It's like, okay.
Yeah, right.
But I wondered about the signal. So you guys were able to yell back and forth. You were close enough that you could hear each other.
Right. Well, you really couldn't understand what they were saying.
Okay.
Just knew that when you heard the voice, you know, okay, let it go.
Right.
That was the signal.
Yeah.
But you couldn't really understand it.
Got it. Okay.
And the same with when, you know, it was just, you would just be quiet and listen for those voices. And you knew what to do just because you heard the voice. You knew what that was signaling.
Right. So at the top, you've got the truck, and the truck's got 55-gallon drums on it, and the hose goes into the drum. You got to get a siphon going on that. And then when the, you, how did that work? Because you'd be looking into the barrel when the gas got low, you'd have to get that hose out of that barrel into another barrel.
Right. And if you were really fast about doing it,
mm-hmm.
you could do that transfer, and it would automatically suck that gasoline out of the next barrel.
Right, because the gas is still falling in the tube down to the river,
right.
Putting a draw there.
Right. But if you weren't fast enough, then you'd have to suck that hose over again.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So you tried really hard to pay attention.
I bet.
I mean, bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you knew what was coming if you didn't pay attention.
Right.
Indeed. And it sucked dry.
Do it all over again. And
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My husband said, I'm surprised we didn't explode.
Well, there is that. I don't think you were smokers.
No.
But they must have been aware of that. There were smokers on Doc's trips. And
yes.
And they must know, okay, well, this is not a good place to do that.
Yes. Evidently, because I never heard of any fires or anything like that.
Right. Right. What else do you recall about that operation there at Whitmore?
I remember the rattlesnakes. There were lots of rattlesnakes, and you had to be careful where you walked, where you stepped, because every trip down, we would see at least two or three rattlesnakes.
My.
Yeah. And we would, you know, try and kill them if we could.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hoping that maybe we would eventually get to the end of them. But, you know, we never did.
Mm.
They were always there.
Okay.
And the biggest fear was one of them crawling into your bed at night.
Right.
And I never had that happen. But, you know, they came close.
Yeah. Hmm.
And the other thing was, you know, keeping them away from the horses.
Right.
So that they wouldn't bite the horses.
Right.
We had a horse one time that was bit by a rattlesnake, not down at the river. I think it was up at the ranch.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly, but he was lame. I don't know if he ever did get better. I don't remember. Or if he eventually just died. I don't remember that.
Okay. Well, Bonnie, we've been happily yik-yakking here for well over an hour.
Okay.
Maybe this is a good place to put another comma here in this oral history interview. What do you think?
I think that would be great.
Okie doke. Well, with that, let's go ahead and conclude part 4 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Bonnie McAllister. Today is Thursday, September 29th, 2022. My name is Tom Martin, and Bonnie, thank you so very much.
You're very welcome.